This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. New this week, we're going to be talking about Suicide Squad, Nine Lives, Phantom Boy, and Life Animated. There's also going to be some news, the trailer park, a Fat Guy 5 near the end of the show, the box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/kevincarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news I want to talk about teases the review I'm going to be doing later in the show, and that's for the Suicide Squad. The embargo, the review embargo, the studio required people to hold their reviews off until just a couple days before the film released. And when it did, immediately people knew something was awry. And actually, I had somebody approach me on Twitter via direct message and was like, why is the review embargo not lifted yet? I mean, it's getting such great buzz, and I would imagine good reviews would help. And they're absolutely right. 9 times out of 10, when studios hold a review embargo, it is because they're afraid of the reviews of the movie. Occasionally, you get something like Star Wars last year, where they're very worried about spoilers, and they're trying to keep as much under wraps as they possibly could. But that's usually not the case. Usually, studios don't care about spoilers. The studios themselves, I mean, the directors and the actors may, but studios generally don't care about spoilers. They are either trying to hide the fact that the movie's not good, or is not getting well received by whoever's seeing it, or there's something about the movie that may not necessarily be bad for the movie, but it might impact its audience. For example, if you had a movie that's geared towards kids and you find out that there's some very intense or very violent sexual assault or something in the movie and people start to focus on that, you will lose your family audience. So a lot of times they'll try, if there's any content in there, they'll sometimes try and stop that content from being shared. But most of the time, I mean, 9 times out of 10, it's because they know the movie's not as good as they wanted it to be. And that's, I believe, what happened, because when suddenly Suicide Squad came out, whether or not you agree if it's a good movie, the reviews aren't good. At the time that the review embargo broke, it suddenly just plummeted down to like a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes. And that sent DC comic fans in a tizzy. I mean, went bonkers. And I'm sorry, I can't remember who said this, but this was a great line somebody said on Twitter. They said, you know, I want to find somebody who loves me as much as people who haven't seen Suicide Squad love Suicide Squad. Because all of this ire was coming from people who hadn't seen the movie yet. People went and saw the movie. In other words, critics. They gave their opinion, which is their job. And when the fanboys was not meshing with what they wanted it to be, they got mad at them. And part of this is also backlash. I think that there was an unfair hatred lofted at Batman versus Superman, and there was a sort of glee taken by some people who so disliked the movie, they wanted to see it fail after seeing it. They may have been anticipating and been excited about it, but were so disappointed that they really wanted to see it fail. So at one point this week, some fanboys put a petition together from change.org to try to get Rotten Tomatoes taken off the internet. Basically saying, shut the site down. It's wrong, and it's biased against DC Universe movies. Here's the thing. First of all, let me explain how Rotten Tomatoes works, y'all. It is not a website that reviews movies. It's an aggregator. I mean, there's other little features and bells and whistles to it, but 90% of what people go to Rotten Tomatoes for, it's an aggregator. And what that means is it takes all these reviews, or they're out there on the internet, and it crunches their numbers together, and it comes up with a composite score. And its algorithm is insanely simple. And all you do is just go in there and you log your review, and you basically rate it up or down. And it's basically you assign whatever your grading scale is to 100 points, and anything 60% and above, you're supposed to rate as positive or fresh, and anything lower is rotten. It's that simple. And then what happens is they take all of the positive reviews, They divide it by the number of total reviews, and that's how you get your score. It is that transparent and simple. Basic third grade math. Critics can dislike a movie, and there's plenty of movies that do well without critical approval. I mean, Michael Bay's, most of his entire filmography gets negative reviews. But they do very well. Now, of course, to make things worse, of course, after this news hit, there are all these think pieces of the reviews. And this is exactly what happened with Batman versus Superman. Suddenly, the story didn't become about whether the movie was good or not. It was about the reviews and the process. And I saw a story out there where they're like, oh, of course, because you see this stuff leak out. Oh, it was studio interference that killed the movie. Because there were two separate movies, and they went and did reshoots to make it more lighthearted because Batman versus Superman was so dark. I'll address that when I do my review. Because I think that's a load of hogwash. That's what they always say. Any director is going to say it's studio interference. Now, sometimes you see it happen, like Josh Trank with Fantastic Four. It's very clear somebody came in and meddled with that movie. However, my point is, if you're working for a studio and you're given $100 million or more to do a giant tentpole release, you're not going to be left alone to be an auteur to do whatever you want to. You're going to have studio meddling. Just accept it. The big example people use of studio meddling that ruined a movie is Alien 3 with David Fincher. You're picking up the Alien franchise and you've done music videos and that's it. You need to do what the studio says. You need to be a hired gun, and you can go out gracefully like Edgar Wright did when he realized that Ant-Man wasn't going to be his vision. It's going to be Marvel's vision. Or you can be a D-bag about it and fight with the studio and forget the fact that you're using their $150 million to do something. That's the way the studio system has always worked, and it will always work. If you want to have your own control, do an independent movie. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's talk about a couple trailers that did not drop at Comic-Con last week. The first one is coming up in October, opening on October 21st. It is Tyler Perry's Boo, a Madea Halloween.
How you doing, baby? Good to see you.
I'm glad you're here to help me with her because there's a party around the corner and I want to be sure she doesn't try to sneak out.
This is going
to
be so wild.
These children today, you got to drop the hammer on them. There's something in this house.
We got to get out of here.
Let's watch.
She's a very kinky girl.
Don't answer that, Mom.
I saw it in a movie. When she answered the phone, she got dead.
Hello, dear. Do you want to play a game?
My first question on this one is, why is it necessary to say Tyler Perry's any Madea movie? Who else is doing Madea movies? Who is taking over that franchise from Tyler Perry? He plays Madea. He directs it. He writes it. It's usually from a stage play. It's just so much ego for Tyler Perry. This looks awful. It looks as bad as every other Tyler Perry movie that has been out. Tyler Perry, I respect the heck out of him for sort of being a lone wolf and doing his own thing and getting his audience, and I'd love to have the bank account that he has. However, he is a terrible filmmaker, and this movie looks like as much crap as Madea Christmas or any of his other films. The next one I want to talk about is The Great Wall, opens on February 17th of next year.
I was born into battle. I fought for greed and gods. This is the first war I've seen worth fighting for.
Biggest news that this made was because it's Matt Damon playing a Chinese guy. Not playing a Chinese guy, but it takes place in feudal China. Yet the main character is Matt Damon. Which sort of reeks of 47 Ronin, where it's supposed to be an all Japanese cast and suddenly here's Keanu Reeves. And I get why the studio does it, because the studio says we need to have a movie star on there. And there really isn't, at this time, there isn't a Asian movie star that you can put on a poster that's going to sell it in America. I mean, maybe you had that with Jackie Chan or Jet Li 10, 15, 20 years ago. You don't have that now. So we're left with basically a Chinese movie starring Matt Damon, which caused a lot of politically incorrect ruckus. And I mean, with good reason. I don't know. This movie looks like it might be interesting, but it might be like 47 Ronin, ruined by the fact that trying to shoehorn a white guy into the main character role. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Nine Lives and Life Animated. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, rolling into the movie reviews. Well, kind of. Not exactly going to be reviewing a movie here. Nine Lives is the first one I'm going to be talking about. Let's just go ahead and give the synopsis, play the trailer really quick, and then I'll give my 2 cents, or probably less, involved in this. Kevin Spacey plays a wealthy executive who suddenly finds himself in the body of a cat and must reconnect with his family.
So, what are you doing in there?
Wait a minute. I'm a cat!
How do I get out of this?
You haven't been there for your family.
When is Daddy gonna come home?
As soon as he finishes work.
You have 1 week to reconnect with them, or you're gonna be stuck inside that cat for the rest of your life.
But I hate cats!
That's what makes this so perfect.
First of all, when I wrote this blurb for it, and it's actually very similar to one that I found online, because I'm not like a plagiarist. I mean, I'm not ready to go speak at a political convention or anything, but I love the idea of him finding himself inside a cat, which is either a hilarious family comedy or a horror story or something that would get like an NC-17 rating. You can take that anyway, but this is a family movie and it stars Kevin Spacey and it's oddly directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. Which, when I saw that, I was like, ooh, who did he cheese off in Hollywood? I mean, what did he do to get relegated to do a movie like Nine Lives? And the reason I say this is because this is a movie that has flown completely under the radar of, I would imagine, a lot of people, me included. I usually have my thumb pretty close to the pulse of what's coming out. I may not be looking ahead a year and a half, because it's so long, but usually I have an idea of what's coming out in the next couple weeks. Nine Lives completely blindsided me. Now, part of it is being released by Eurocorp, and it doesn't seem to have a larger distributor partner. You know, it's not like Universal is handling it, but it's really Eurocorp's movie. It's a small movie that has, like I said, existed under the radar. I think if you watch enough TV, if you watch the right shows, they're probably advertising heavily on like kids networks. But outside of that, I didn't even know this movie existed. I remember there was a big hubbub about 10 Cloverfield Lane earlier this year where people were like, how do they keep that movie under wraps? Well, how did they make an entire Nine Lives with award-winning director Barry Sonnenfeld and Kevin Spacey from House of Cards? Ultimately, this looks like a dumb kids movie. It looks like something that would go direct to video. And the only reason it's getting a actual theatrical release is that nothing was going up against Suicide Squad and they decided to dump it in the theaters. This begs the question, if a House of Cards falls in the woods and nobody sees the movie, does it make any sound at all? Look, I did not see this movie. I usually work tirelessly to see as many movies as I possibly can before they come out. But there were some conflicts this week. And usually by the time we get to August, I am so exhausted from busting my chops to go see all these movies that I eventually skip a couple of them. I play hooky every now and then. But if I play hooky, it's over something like Nine Lives. I don't think I'm missing much. And I can give it a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for critics at all, at least here. I mean, they may have done very, very limited screens, but they certainly didn't screen it for critics in Columbus, Ohio. So I'm going to say Nine Lives preemptively sucks and probably isn't good unless you see it on video and you're like 5.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie, which is Life Animated, This touching documentary profiles an autistic man who was able to come out of his shell as a child with the help of Disney animated films.
We're beginning to give up hope. And one day we're watching the Disney animated movies. And he says he doesn't want to grow up like Mowgli or Peter Pan. And all of a sudden it became clear to us. He's using these movies to make sense of the world he actually is living in, our world. So at that point, we began to speak to him in Disney dialogue.
I've been scared my whole life of growing up. Peter Pan doesn't want to grow up because when you grow up, you lose all your magical childhood times.
Over the last couple years, I've had a chance to see more documentaries, partly because there's a theater in town. It's the Gateway Film Center on the OSU campus in Columbus, Ohio. And they're great. They show a lot of films. They're smaller films, and they get a lot of content in there. They're not the big movies. They play big movies, but they also play some very specialty programming. And they try as best they can to screen as much as they can. And one of the movies they screened and made a point to show us was Life Animated. Now, a lot of times documentaries, they have to be big deal documentaries for us to get a screening of regular critics. But these little things, the Gateway Film Center shows it to us. And so I got a chance to see it there. And this has given me a chance to see some documentaries which aren't good. And I've seen some documentaries that are quite beautiful and insightful. And this one is a quite heartwarming and charming and uplifting documentary. It's a bit of a shill for Disney, but I don't think it's because Disney's doing anything. I think this is a shill for Disney because it's honoring Disney. And when you just talk strictly Disney animated films, I'm not talking about their live action stuff. I'm not talking about Marvel or Star Wars or any of the other ancillary properties they have. Strictly their animated films. This shows the joy and the messaging and the universal stories that are told in their movies. This movie is about this guy who, when he was a kid, he was a normal kid, and then he developed autism and went in a shell and wouldn't communicate, wouldn't talk. It was very difficult. It was very challenging for his parents. And they found that he connected. There was something about the Disney animated movies that connected with him, and they started to be able to use those as communication conduits with him. There's a beautiful scene where the father talks about when he first actually had a conversation with his son. Normally, kids are starting to be conversational when they're two. I babysit for my cousin, Cody the Destroyer. If you follow me on Instagram, you've seen pictures of Cody. And Cody's like two now. Oh, you have full conversations with this kid. That's how normal kids develop their speech. Well, in this movie, this guy had never had a conversation with his son. And he goes in there and he sees his son on his bed and he picks up a puppet of Iago, Gilbert Gottfried's character from Aladdin, the little parrot. And he starts talking to him as Iago. And the kid actually converses with him. And whatever was about these movies connected with him. And it allowed him to filter out the noise and all the problems and get to that point. It's a very beautiful movie. And what's interesting is there's a friend of mine. He's not severely autistic. He's, much higher in the spectrum. And he's not into movies, but he's like crazy into television. He's probably seen the TV show Scrubs in its entirety dozens of times. He loves TV and he watches TV passionately. I found it very interesting because it shows how the visual medium can, this fake world that you can get into can help make sense. You can make sense of it a little bit better than the chaotic outside world. And there are times in the movie it shows when it clashes, where Happily Ever After clashes with real life, because real life isn't Happily Ever After. And if you get a Happily Ever After moment in real life, you've got the rest of your life for disappointment and heartache and awful things to happen, along with other Happily Ever After moments. But yeah, Life Animated is a great demonstration of the power of Disney's films. And it's worth seeing for people who sometimes get really down on Disney for being simplistic or formulaic or being restrictive on certain things. This shows that there certainly is power and worth to them. So I'm going to have to say Life Animated totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Suicide Squad and Phantom Boy.
I want to be like you. I want to walk like you. Talk like you.
Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about Suicide Squad, probably one of the most anticipated films of the summer. I wouldn't say the year, but definitely the summer. Based on the popular DC comic, the government brings together some of the world's greatest criminals to defeat an otherworldly threat.
I want to build a team of some very bad people who I think can do some good.
Y'all jokers must be crazy. Tell me what to do. This is the deal. You disobey me, you die. Try to escape, you die.
You got a boyfriend?
You irritate or vex me.
I'm known to be quite vexing. I'm just forewarning you.
I talked a bit about Suicide Squad in the first segment, talking about sort of the backlash to the critical reviews. I'm going to just not bury the lead here. I am in agreement with a lot of the critics when it comes to Suicide Squad. However, I'm not disappointed because I was expecting it to be a great movie. I had a lot of reservations, and I'm sure I've spoken about them on the show before. First of all, David Ayers is not a happy-go-lucky director. If you look at his movies, Fury, which was the one about the tanks, you got End of Watch, which is that found footage movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña, Sabotage with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sabotage is a great example of this because it is hardcore sleazy people in that movie. And it kind of reminds me of when, like, Kurt Sutter did another Jake Gyllenhaal movie, Southpaw, last year. It was just so dreary and sleazy. It's not dark. First of all, don't mistake my criticism for David Ayer's stuff to be complaining about something being dark. I'm okay with something being dark. I've seen a lot of dark movies, and I love dark comedies. But there still needs to be a warmth to darkness. There still needs to be a likability to characters. And my problem with David Ayer's movie is his characters are usually either sleazy or extremely unappealing in some way. And that's one of the problems with Suicide Squad. And the only thing that transcends that is the actors in Suicide Squad. Will Smith's character of Deadshot, for example, is not a nice guy. But Will Smith is just so congenial. He's like Tom Hanks. You see him on screen, he literally played the devil in a movie once. And he still kind of liked him. Cause he's Will Smith. And like Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie, while her accent slips here and there, I forgive that for as many shots of her butt cheeks you see in fishnets. What makes her character good is her as an actor. She really has charisma on screen. She really works and she really pops and she really brings that character to life. And that character is very interesting from the comics. But the problem with Suicide Squad is it's just a mess. It's way too crowded. I remember when I first heard about this and they start releasing cast photos, I'm like, this is way too crowded. They've got like 10 characters in it. Very few of you've never met any of these people before. I mean, the Avengers, you have a bunch of movies leading up to it, or at least if a movie like Batman versus Super, you drop Batman in a movie, people know who Batman is, and Batman is in this movie. That's like the high points of the movie. The Batman shows up, oh, and he's gone. But you can throw in Batman, Superman, Clark Kent, Lois Lane. You know who these people are, but nobody in the mainstream knows who Deadshot is, really. They have the Joker in there, and while it's neat to see the Joker on screen again, I mean, it's the problem that we saw when we first saw the images of the Joker. He's all tatted up. There are more tattoos in this movie. There are more face tattoos in this movie than I have ever seen in a movie in my life. It is the most needlessly ghettoized, grill-wearing, tattooed, gangster-looking film, and it doesn't need to be, because he's the Joker. He's not Joker gangsta. He's the Joker. And Jared Leto does an okay job with him, but he really doesn't do anything that new. I mean, Heath Ledger really broke the mold when he did the Joker in The Dark Knight. And that was fantastic. But in this one, he feels like he's just sort of channeling a version of Heath Ledger. And the other problem with the Joker is he's completely unnecessary to the movie. You could literally edit out every scene of the Joker in this film, and you would change nothing about the film. That's part of the problem, is he's extraneous. And a lot of the characters are extraneous. I mean, they've got a guy who can shoot fire who doesn't shoot fire because he doesn't want to. And they've got Killer Croc, who was a great villain in the books, but he just kind of hits really hard and looks a little scary and can swim. I mean, they're sort of underutilized, and there's so many of them. It takes a half hour to introduce all the characters via music video. And then the bad guy, the thing that they're going up against is sort of this otherworldly, monstrous god. I seriously thought they edited scenes from Gods of Egypt from earlier this year. Then when you have the big climax, how many superhero movies have we seen a swirling vortex over a city ready to rain down destruction? We saw that in Man of Steel. We saw that in X-Men Apocalypse earlier this year. We saw it in Fantastic Four last year. We saw it in Green Lantern. We saw it in Avengers. It's so common in movies, enough with these swirling vortexes of trash in the sky. There's so much wrong with Suicide Squad that it's just a mess. And I mean, the whole thing, oh, well, studio meddled with it and they want it to be more lighthearted. It's not even that lighthearted. This is not a kid's movie at all. And I don't think it'll appeal to kids. It's kind of boring. And while it does feel like they've edited and meddled with it to get more big set pieces, I could see what Ayer's vision was in here, and it wasn't good because it was so not dark, but sleazy and unpleasant. And you really couldn't root for anybody. You want to see anti-hero done well? Watch Deadpool. Deadpool's a great example of that. Deadpool is not a good guy. He's a mercenary for hire. And he does a lot of bad things. He kills a lot of people. But there's an appeal and there's a nice bit about Deadpool. You like him. You root for the guy. You don't root for these guys. Suicide Squad's a mess. And that's a shame because this could have been an interesting movie. But right now, it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Phantom Boy. This is an animated film from France. It's done by the same people who did A Cat in Paris, which was nominated for an Academy Award a couple years ago. A boy with the power of astral projection helps an injured police officer in a hospital track down a madman ready to take over the city's computer systems.
From the creators of the Oscar-nominated A Cat in Paris, now comes a new exciting adventure of a boy with extraordinary powers. Phantom Boy. He's 11. He's invisible. And he's got 24 hours to save New York.
If you see one superhero movie this weekend, make it Phantom Boy and not Suicide Squad. Phantom Boy is a fantastic superhero movie. I kept waiting for it to go all pear-shaped because it sets itself up totally as a superhero movie. Because this kid's got this power. I call it astral projection. They never say that in there, but he can leave his body and float around and see things. And basically what he does when he's in this hospital, because he's getting cancer treatments, he's able to help people who've left their body get back to their body and help them get out of comas and wake up. And it's kind of this neat little charming superpower. And he helps this police officer track down this madman. And the madman is a total comic book villain. I mean, they make this very much like a comic book. And I kept waiting for it to fall apart. I kept waiting for it to suddenly shift and get boring or to get stupid. But no, it basically follows this very, not formulaic, but very standard superhero type story. This is the kind of movie that you could remake live action. I would love to see Disney to pick this up and do it as a live action remake. It's very touching. This relationship this boy has with this police officer and how they break through his tough exterior. But also then the guy thinks this kid's a great kid and wants to save him and doesn't want the kid endangering himself using his power. So Phantom Boy is a wonderful movie. It's uniquely animated, and it totally has a story and a message that can connect with anybody, not just people from France or America. It can be made for anybody. And it's a great little film. I'm going to say Phantom Boy totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Fat Guy Five, which is the five winners and losers of summer 2016, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr for the final segment. It is the end of summer. I mean, it's technically still summer. You walk outside, it's 90 billion degrees out. And school hasn't quite started yet. My wife's a teacher. She starts on like the middle of August. I mean, like literally a week and a half. And that's when my kids go back to school too. So they go to school pretty early in August. But movie theaters though, summer's kind of over. There have been August movies that have done well. The first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie was a great example of a late summer movie that did very well. But usually if you can push it into that first weekend of August, which is the hope for Suicide Squad, and that was the hope for Guardians of the Galaxy that paid off quite a bit 2 years ago. But since it's the end of the summer, let's talk about the winners and losers of this summer. There were a lot of movies I was highly anticipating, and sadly, very few of them ended up living up to the hype. And there were a lot of losers in that respect. The first winner this summer is Disney. And it's not just because of the summer. Right now, currently, before we get all the weekend numbers in, Disney holds the highest domestic gross for four of the five top movies of the year. That would be Finding Dory and Captain America Civil War, which are both big summer movies. They're both over $400 million. But also, they had Zootopia and the Jungle Book, which were spring movies, but they still got play in the summer. They still were working their way through the theaters and the smaller houses and into the sort of second run theaters. Those two certainly benefited from the summer. So Disney did extremely well. Disney is a huge winner this year. Yeah, they had Alice Through the Looking Glass, which didn't do well, but they've got, with just these movies themselves, it's like almost $1.5 billion just for these domestic totals of these movies. A big loser, remakes and sequels. This year, I wouldn't say it's been unprecedented, the number of remakes and sequels that we had, but we certainly had a lot. And while you had stuff like Captain America Civil War and Finding Dory, which were sequels, you also had stuff like Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, you had Alice Through the Looking Glass, you had X-Men Apocalypse, all of these just in the month of May did not do well. You had stuff like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. You had Now You See Me 2. You had Independence Day Resurgence. Again, all these sequels, sometimes underperforming, sometimes significantly underperforming. And then on the remake factor, you've got Ghostbusters, which is okay. Another sequel is Ice Age Collision Course didn't do well. Star Trek Beyond didn't do terribly. It's suffering. It's not doing nearly as well as its previous installments. So remakes and sequels took it on the chin this summer because very few of them were hits. There were like a, you know, out of all of them, I'd say probably less than 25%. Now, one of the winners, which includes a sequel, is horror movies. Horror movies were big winners. Animation was also a big winner because the animation you had Finding Dory's and Secret Life of Pets. But horror movies, you had Lights Out. You had The Conjuring 2. You had The Purge Election Year, which is, it's, that was more of an action movie, but it still works as a horror movie. Number four, The Losers. Big losers this summer in movies. Online social justice warriors. These were the people that demanded that Ghostbusters was good, and the only reason that it got bad press was because of idiot man children who lived in their basement. And that's not the case. You have to back up these claims. Ghostbusters did knock it out of the park. Winners and losers in the final slot for number five. Wrapping it up, international box office is a big winner. It is that international box office that saved movies like Warcraft, Now You See Me 2, Legend of Tarzan, Independence Day Resurgence. Without the foreign numbers, these movies would be notorious bombs. With the foreign numbers, stuff like Warcraft is actually doing quite well overall in its global box office, even though domestic box office is only 1/10 of its worldwide box office. And then finally, animation was a big winner. But it had some losers in it as well, though. I mean, like I said, it mentioned Dory and Pets, but you also had Angry Birds and Ice Age, which was also saved by international box office because it bombed in the U.S. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That was my rundown of the five big fat winners and losers of summer 2016. Let's move on to the box office and talk about the winners there. Last week, I said that Jason Bourne was going to make $60 million at the box office. I was bang on with that prediction. I was absolutely right. It made $59.2 million, which is just under $60 million. And that's very good for a Bourne movie, even though that movie wasn't very good. It had good action, just didn't have much of a story. And I think people were just happy that there was at least a watchable movie there. Bad Mom did pretty well with $24 million. And Star Trek Beyond took a big dip with $25 million in its second weekend. That's a massive drop from, that's like 58% from last weekend. This movie's not going to have staying power. Now let's talk about Suicide Squad. Obviously, Suicide Squad is going to win unless it does so insanely terrible that it dips under Jason Bourne, but I don't think it will. It's still going to do well. The hype will get you that first day and a half. Here's the thing. People are predicting $140 million for this movie. It's not going to make that much. I can't imagine it topping Deadpool. Not with these bad reviews. And I'm not saying that people listen to reviews necessarily, but I think there's a lot of people that when it gets these bad reviews and pretty across the board bad reviews that are all kind of saying the same things, there are a lot of people that may wait. You're going to see this be very front loaded. You're going to start seeing the numbers come in. The Thursday night numbers are going to make it look very promising. Then the Friday numbers are going to look okay. The Saturday numbers are going to take a dip and Sunday numbers are going to take a hit. Part of the problem that this is going to face is it's not a kids movie, but it's also not an R-rated movie. Deadpool was very blatant in saying Deadpool is not for kids. Suicide Squad is, I think, still kind of trying to be a kids family movie in a certain way. It just doesn't do it very well. But it's not like Iron Man where it's sort of this four quadrant film. I've also heard people talking about the Fandango ticket pre-sales is topping the list of the most that they've ever done. I don't believe those. The reason I don't believe those is that's still a growth market. Every week is a new record on Fandango ticket pre-sales. There's a lot of people who buy tickets online, especially since there's so many movie theaters that are converting to the reserved seating that you actually reserve the actual seat. There's a lot of people who will buy a ticket to a movie and then just not show up until the movie's about ready to start 10 minutes into the trailers. That drives online ticket sales, but it doesn't necessarily drive ticket sales up. There's a distinction. So the bad buzz and the bad word of mouth, and I think also there's going to be just people's bad word of mouth. There's going to be people who love the movie, but I think there's going to be a lot of people that are like, yeah, it kind of has problems. It's not something to race out and see. It's not this movie that everyone likes. And I think it's going to be reflected in people's responses. I mean, the screening I saw it was a very lukewarm mix. There were some people who loved it and some people who were just like, huh? So in the end, maybe Suicide Squad's good. I'm going to say 100-ish. I don't know where it's going to fall in that ish scale because there's a lot of factors that can go into this and a lot of things can change. But I think the $140 million predictions are absolute nonsense. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Now's the time to roll into the home cinema roundup. The big one this week is Keanu. This one didn't do as well as I had hoped it would in the theaters. I think it was just too bizarre of a comedy. And this one is about Key and Peele going after their gangster cat. And they're just sort of these suburban guys who are going into the deep, deep ghetto to find their cat. It's a very funny movie. Augmented with, you know, alcohol tends to be even funnier. It plays even better on home video. And that's the kind of movie these, a lot of comedies tend to play Even better on home video when you can watch them in a group of people you know and like, and you can all laugh at it and have a lot of fun and kick back at home rather than be a little bit more stuffy in the theaters. Different types of comedies do well on the big screen. I think this one was a little more out there than a very mainstream comedy. But Keanu's great. It's a lot of fun. Check it out on DVD and Blu-ray. There's also Mother's Day, which is Gary Marshall's final film. Rest in peace. Yeah, he just died recently. I literally got the review copy within a week of his death. It was sort of sad. The Lobster is also out on DVD and Blu-ray. This is a very interesting movie about dating and sort of a outside-of-the-box look at human relationships. The Bronze, which did not do well, which I kind of liked, which was Melissa Rauch's movie in which she is a bronze medalist who has never quite grown up. Batman, The Killing Joke, which got some mixed reviews when it was seen in theaters because they added a whole side story with Barbara Gordon having an affair with Batman, which isn't in the original book. April in the Extraordinary World, which is a real neat animated movie that's definitely worth seeing if you like foreign animated films. High Rise with Tom Hiddleston. Society Gone Wrong Inside a Single Building film. And then Red Sonja, Queen of Plagues, which is from Shout Factory. It's an animated movie that comes off the Red Sonja legend. And that's it for me. I need to take off. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Pete's Dragon and Sausage Party. But until then, have a fat time at the movies.